is Hazel Khan, and you're tuned to Tidings, a monthly program where I bring you tidings from all over the world. Today, I'm delighted to welcome back Raza Rumi, author, writer, journalist, editor, blogger, and analyst, who, unlike the last time we spoke nearly 3 years ago, Raza is not in Pakistan, but in Washington, D.C. He was forced to flee from his country after narrowly missing an assassination attempt on his life in Lahore, which tragically killed his driver. So I welcome you again to Tidings, Raza.
Many thanks, Hazel. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So I'm grateful that, despite the irony, you've agreed to have a conversation about hospitality after experiencing, really, the most grievous opposite of hospitality from your own countrymen.
I do agree with you.
But irony aside, the history and significance of hospitality runs deep and rich not only in Pakistan, but in many other cultures, and which for you, as a follower of the Sufi tradition, will also have a profound, maybe personal meaning. So I just wonder if a good place to start would be to sort of lay out for our listeners some of the fundamental dimensions, practices, beliefs, I don't know, traditions of hospitality. And if you don't mind, I'll do something I really don't ever do, and that's to abdicate my usual role as interviewer and ask you to set the stage and tell us what ground we'll cover, which I imagine will also expand into things like friendship and loyalty. And after that, perhaps, we can talk about some of the questions that have been really troubling me recently. Is that okay with you?
That's quite all right, Hazel, and thanks for this unusual opportunity. Usually it is the interviewer, you know, coming up with the tough questions, but I'm finding your decision to let me lay out the sort of ground for this talk as very much in line with what the idea of hospitality in my culture and various other cultures means. Surely you are extending the same kind of hospitality to me in your program, the way that we sort of have grown up with the notion of hospitality, of welcoming visitor, a friend, a foreigner into our fold. You do have experienced that because you lived in so many parts of the world, and including Pakistan. So the idea emanates, you know, I think it is deep-rooted both in culture and religion. In culture, it is deep-rooted as in the fact that, you know, before the world turned all advanced and industrialized, you know, it was about communities and about communal support networks. And, you know, in countries like Pakistan or Iran or other parts of the Middle East, you still have that sense of community and that sense of communal networks. And where an outsider enters that network, that outsider then becomes part of the larger whole and not just an individual guest. So then all things come to the fore, as in welcoming the individual, being hospitable, and then the whole culture sort of moves forward to welcome that. And, you know, this idea then, I use the word religion not in the conventional institutionalized sense, but as you rightly mentioned in your introduction, from the very notion of the Sufi tradition, which propagated that, you know. For example, the Sufis also think that human beings, I mean, we all are visitors to this world, and we came from somewhere, and, you know, we are here for a short time, and perhaps then we have to depart to a destination unknown. So that particular stay of ours in this world needs to be meaningful, purposeful, beautiful, and in line with all that a community does to its individual, which is to support and nurture and nourish. So this idea of nourishing is very central here. So all the Sufi orders, and the Sufis are basically the practitioners of Islamic faith, and they owe some of the ideas and thoughts from the Christian and the Jewish mystics who also practiced that level of spirituality, where human beings are not human beings in themselves, but they are reflection of the divine reality, of the oneness of the universe and the creative force of that universe. And therefore, they have to be treated at par with the divine. And that idea is one of the reasons why, you know, this culture of hospitality in the so-called East or the Orient, you know, with due apologies to Edward Said, who turned Orientalism into a whole new meaning. But what it means in the East and in the Orient is all rooted in these old fables and ideas. So the Sufi orders set up these meditative spaces, or also known as khanqahs, you know. These were like large, how would I put it? I mean, they were like the way you have motels.
Not havelas.
Taverns or, yeah, havelas as well. I mean, you could say that, but...
Sarais, right?
Sarais.
Like a caravanserai.
Caravanserai, absolutely, absolutely. So if you're driving in the US, you know, on a main highway, you would come across, you know, these resting areas and where you could buy food and get your gas. And if you want to stay overnight, there's a motel as well. But these were more than these places, because here the visitors were traveling in olden times when travel was not that easy. You didn't have roads or trains or planes or advanced means of communication. So they would stop by and they would be integrated into that little community and taken care of and extended that hospitality with a spiritual purpose. And so a lot of conversions that took place through Sufis and continue to do so, less so in recent times, but, you know, in the medieval times, were largely a result of that whole impression that was made on the visitor, on the temporary entrant into that space. And they would be fed, they would be taken care of, their emotional and psychological needs would also be met or addressed through a strain of spirituality or through meditation or through just a calm of the place. And that's what generated the whole idea of friendship and loyalty, which was not beyond the ordinary notions how people become friends or are loyal to each other. Here were friends who were tied or bonded through some commonly held or practiced spiritual mores. And hence the whole idea of loyalty also emerged, that then once you were tied through a common bond, then you were also loyal to each other, because you were loyal to the creator or the divine reality or the and human beings as a representative or as a manifestation of that.
Not just expectation that your hospitality would be returned somehow.
It was not so much about, you know, give or take or a transactional relationship as we have now, you know, in the kind of irreligious or non-religious sphere of existence that where most of us exist anyway on a day-to-day level. But here it was the idea of giving which took precedence and not receiving, you know. And that is when it becomes most meaningful as well, when you actually give your best or your warmth or your extend the warmth and hospitality without any expectation of a return favor. And this is very deep rooted. Of course, it's changing, and, you know, I wouldn't like to draw this binary that, you know, in the Eastern countries people are hospitable and they remain so, because, you know, those societies are also changing. But, you know, at the same time, these are very powerful ideas deep rooted in the sociology and in the psyche, collective psyche of people. And this is why if you end up at a stranger's house in a country, you know, where I come from, for example, I'll speak about that with some ease, then you are immediately taken care of, you know, you're extending warmth and all hospitality becomes a part of that process of giving. So, you know, if you know all these, you know, cliches exist that the Pakhtuns or the Pathans in northwest of Pakistan and Afghanistan and other places, they have this tribal code where the guest then has to be given the best treatment and not asked to leave. And that sadly has also turned into a bit of a problem, because if you remember that Osama bin Laden was hosted by the Taliban in Afghanistan and as a guest. And when 9/11 took place, Pakistan asked Afghanistan, basically trying to help the US to give him up or, hand him over. And the Taliban responded saying, no, he's our guest. So, howsoever terrible the guest may be, which is a bit problematic, of course, but I'm just laying out a very extreme example.
Right, but which the, and the extreme actually has to do with also length of time, because I read somewhere that that hospitality contract, if you or understanding, social compact, understanding is usually after about 3 days, it's sort of it loses its sacred quality, and you can. You're overstaying maybe after 3 days or so days. Is that so?
Yes, in different cultures and different tribes, they have these limits. Yes, indeed, you're right. But other than the Sufi references, I would like to draw your attention to, one of the great thinkers of the 20th century, Eric Fromm, a very prolific writer as well. He wrote a lot about how the excessive individualism was fragmenting Western societies, and the atomization of life and social groupings was taking place. And I remember that reading somewhere in one of his books, I think, the call for hospitality towards a stranger is actually a means to resist that fragmentation of excessive individualism. And hospitality, when you give it or take it, it kind of reaffirms the grace, the kind of human qualities or humane qualities that we all idealize. But unfortunately, because in the way societies emerge or take place, you actually give them up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're connecting the fragments in a way when you enter somebody's home like that as a stranger, as an individual atomized person, somehow the walls, both of you are contained by the same wall or the
Exactly.
same under the same roof or something like that.
Yes, rather well put. Yes, exactly. And so that resistance to fragmentation is also the idea that human beings exist and function, have always, since time immemorial, since the hunting-gathering days, have acted as small groups and communities. And if you isolate the individual, then, delinked from the community, that individual then is in a kind of an unnatural state of being. And this is why you have so many modern manifestations or what are known as the psychological conditions of being alone, of loneliness, of depression, of
Alienation.
alienation. Precisely, yes, alienation is an all-encompassing state of being. And that emerges because once you are cut off from that human bond or bonding, that is so essential, because it has always been a primordial human quest to be understood. When humans did not know the art of language or to speak or to write, that was their immediate need, was how would they make the other understand
And to be recognized.
and to be recognized. And we are inheritors of those species millions of years ago, evolved, but our DNAs and our psychological structures are rooted there. And so that is the idea where society and the individual and the group and the community, they all fit in. So individualism is important. Individual space, individual rights, individual ambitions, aspirations must also find a way, because what happens in our Eastern societies, on the other hand, the downside is that the individual is suppressed by the collective. So, the pendulum swings the other way, and that leads to another kind of psychological tension and malady, where the individual expression is also thwarted.
Raza Rumi, Pakistani author, blogger, journalist, and follower of the Sufi tradition, is talking about hospitality. This is WPKN Radio.
So the real challenge here is to find a balance between the two. And that balance is, I suppose, what all legal systems, what all, sociological frameworks, political orders, family structures try to provide. And coming back to this idea of loyalty and friendship, again, I'm reminded of Eric Fromm, who also said that love is union with somebody or something outside oneself, if I remember it correctly, under the condition of retaining the separateness and integrity of oneself. So it's that idea where you have a kind of a common bond. You're not really, thinking alike or looking alike or feeling alike, but you are connected. So that essential human bond is what these notions of hospitality and loyalty and friendship, they provide.
But the thing about being a guest as opposed to a member of the family is that you are a stranger. I mean, it's very much about also welcoming the stranger. There's something about that act, which is what hospitality is about, right? Welcoming the stranger.
Yes.
And I wonder if, if that's one of the dimensions on which Western and Eastern concepts or practices of hospitality vary, because for the most part, I would say the stranger is usually not welcome in the Western culture.
Yes, I think the stranger is kind of looked with some suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, I mean, that is a function of the way a society operates or looks at human beings. But that, again, as I said, that breeds alienation, because it is alienating for the stranger, of course, or the guest or the visitor or whoever. But it's also alienating for the host. Because even though the host attempts to connect, he or she cannot, So in a way that also hurts or affects his or her psychological well-being.
Right, because you always hear that, an Eastern host will always offer you, whether it's food or a bed or a pair of shoes, whatever the thing is, and you must not refuse it, or you can keep refusing it, but he will keep giving it to you.
Yes.
And there's something actually ultimately offensive about saying no, even though there's some play, interplay. Is that right? Or have I got that?
Yes, you're right. There's a interplay of this hospitality versus acceptance versus refusal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tension, but it's a deliberate tension laid out for an effect.
Mostly I'm thinking of people's homes, the visitor go, the guest. But it's not just that. I mean, I've been in bazaars. I've been in the old city of Jerusalem, with a lot of Palestinian shopkeepers and so on. And there, they welcome you into the shop. The whole act of hospitality doesn't just exist in the home, in the private home or in the family home, but in the shop. They will accompany you. You're leaving. They'll take you a certain distance and accompany you. It's also part of the act of hospitality. It doesn't really have to be somebody's home.
Yes, indeed. All right, about that, before I forget, I wanted to mention, Saadi, a Persian poet who wrote a famous long books in verse, Gulistan and Bostan, and they were taught to our elders and grandparents, and in which there's a very beautiful part where Saadi says, one day in the bath, a sweet-smelling piece of clay came from the hand of a beloved one to my hand. I asked, art thou musk or ambergris? Because thy aromatic odor intoxicates me. It replied, I was a despicable lump of clay, but for a while was in the company of a rose. The perfection of my companion took effect on me. And if not, I am the same earth which I am. So the idea is that, here's an ordinary piece of clay, but living close to the roses or rose water or rose scent, gives a new life or a shape to that ordinary piece of clay.
Transformation, transformative.
Transformation, yes, exactly. And so this is the idea where friendship and the act of hospitality indeed is also a transformational moment. Because remember again in the olden times, people would learn a lot from newcomers, from outsiders. They would learn of new cultures, ideas, words, facets of life, because travel was not that easy. Information did not pass through as quickly as it does, in our times.
Well, that's kind of the conceit, if you will, behind my program, Tidings, that it's
Yes.
people travelers bringing tidings from other places.
Oh, wonderful. Yes,
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful idea.
Oh, thank you.
That is precisely how the caravanserais or the khanqahs or the, for centuries, this is how it worked. People came in and celebrated ideas and passed on newer things to share. And that's how the frontiers of human knowledge and understanding expanded. And that's how empathy also expanded for other cultures. And it is a bit of a shame that, we live in this totally connected world, and yet so many misconceptions persist about other people. In the East have different ideas about those who live in the West, and those in the West have ideas or stereotypes about those who live in the East or North or South, whichever way you want to look at. And for example, this whole business of Islam and Islamophobia or Islamism or whatever is again a reflection of that. At the end of the day, it indicates somewhere down the line that there is a genuine lack of understanding on both sides.
Well, in a sense, to go back to the open door of hospitality, it's keeping people out of the house, not letting them in.
Well, so well said. So well said. And keeping them out, and actually, the media are presenting a strange sort of a vision or a portrayal of the visitor that is knocking at your door.
But this is why when I said to you at the beginning, I have a question that's a couple of questions that are really troubling me. So, in the interest of time, I want to really express this. And that is when I think of Syria, Iraq, anybody, all in these dispossessed people, we hear about in Timbuktu, in Bamiyan, all these places where they have destroyed the culture, in Baghdad, and where they've looted the art treasures and the architecture. That's one thing, and those are the material, visible things. As I look at these refugee camps, with all of these people displaced, millions of them, I just wonder what happens to traditions like hospitality. Do those get destroyed? How will these people who are so disenfranchised now and so separated and in such a hostile environment that they're in these tents and these camps, how will they retain this culture of hospitality, among other things?
Yeah, it's a very difficult one, frankly, to address. But I think the only way forward or the only way out, Hazel, is the fact that that we have to step out of ourselves or the received knowledge or the received wisdom or the received images that flash or inform our minds, and actually step out of that domain and attempt at recognizing the other. That the other may just turn out to be like yourself, but in a different setting, in a different context, a product of different factors. And I think it's that intercultural understanding, and it's that, or if you extend it to interfaith understanding, is so lacking in our times or in our societies everywhere. So programs like yours, for example, bridge those gaps. I mean, I know they're few and far between, but these are the voices and these are the venues and spaces which attempt at bringing that particular understanding.
Well, that's encouraging. I mean, the same goes for you. We should end, Raza, because I'd like you to end by saying how, we haven't talked at all about your work. This was just all off the top of your head. I found you and I said, please, can you talk about hospitality? Even though I don't even know if you've ever written or published or lectured or anything about this. But why don't you tell people who would be interested in knowing more about you, how they can find out what you have published and what you are. Your many blogs, for example. And also, I saw that you published, or in HarperCollins, India, published your book about Delhi, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's a book that I would Definitely, those who are interested in South Asia or both India and Pakistan or that region and its history, you know, basically I've done a book on the Indian capital, Delhi. It's called Delhi by Heart, Impressions of a Pakistani Traveler. It was published last year. And, you know, basically that is my exploration of the capital and its magnificent history, known history for at least 1,000 years. And more so because I write it as a Pakistani who considers, you know, or whose country considers Delhi to be the enemy capital. And actually turns out that it's not, and it's just a part of the Pakistani or the South Asian cultural identity that one has. But my website, razarumi.com, has lots of my work archived there. The essays I've been writing and articles and columns, etc., they all can be found there. And from there, you can find all the links. But in brief, what has you know, happened here is that, you know, despite all the atomization that I've been talking about, you know, when I arrived here a few months ago
From Lahore
from Lahore
to Washington.
to Washington, D.C., because I had some family here, and, you know, after escaping death. And but, you know, quite frankly, I was very well received. I didn't know so many people here, but I knew some people, and some people knew me, and I've met many people, and it has been wonderful. And so I am also entering into a different phase of understanding the American culture, because I never lived here. I mean, I've visited the US before, but it's my first time that I've lived for this long, and I'm currently a fellow at the United States Institute of Peace.
Oh, are you?
Yes, and so I mean, I'm doing a paper on Pakistan, but so this has given a different meaning to hospitality, and I would definitely like to thank you know, all the people here and friends and colleagues who have kind of looked after me and given me this this space. So, you know, in a way, which basically says that nothing is static, or nothing that we know is final.
Yes, and hospitality is really a very, very large umbrella.
Large umbrella,
Yeah.
exactly,
Well, this
exactly.
is lovely. I'm really glad to be back in touch with you, Raza, and I don't know, we'll be in touch, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now that
Okay.
I'm here,
Yeah.
we'll perhaps meet as well, and we'll keep on
Right.
talking
That's
later.
right. We've never actually met.
Yes.
So thank you very much indeed.
Yes,
Thank
thank
you,
you.
Raza Rumi. Heard Raza Rumi, Pakistani author, blogger, journalist, and follower of the Sufi tradition, talking about hospitality. Raza now lives in Washington, D.C., following his exodus from Lahore, where he narrowly escaped an assassination attempt. Tidings is heard on the second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. All Tidings programs are archived at hazelkahn.com and produced by Tony Ernst.